Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Las Galinas.
Las Galinas.
Yeah, I'm doing the drywall up there at the new McDonald's.
He's so good.
There's like a sultry pride to him in yes. every aspect of his life.
He really digs himself, man. And I love it too.
Yeah. Doing the drywall up there at the new McDonald's.
Well, hello and welcome to the Confused Breakfast. Do you remember the pure joy of a trip to the video rental store as a kid?
Yeah.
It's hard to beat the ease of the modern era and streaming platforms where you don't even have to leave your couch. But there was something truly special about coming home from your terrible job in a cubicle farm, stopping at Blockbuster, picking out a movie by hand, and taking it home to watch. On this podcast, we revisit and dissect some of our favorite childhood movies from that magical era to see if they still move us the way they did as kids. My name is Mike Schulte. Joining me, as always, two dudes who always forget to send me their TPS reports. Sean Pryor and AJ Vance, how the heck are you?
It's just my last thought when I'm trying to get out of the office, all right? I don't do it on purpose. It's just like I don't want to do it.
But I sent the memo to AJ, and then he gave you the memo.
I've got two copies of them, yes. I'll do all right. I'll do better.
Sometimes I get to the point, like, I do my TPS reports, and then I realize, I didn't get one of the new cover letters. And I was like, I'm not even going to send it now, because they're just going to hassle me about the cover letter anyways.
This podcast is definitely, we've become pretty corporate here. We used to be really fun and raw and indie, and now we're very corporate.
We just got our W-9s, whatever the fuck they're called.
1099.
Yeah.
It doesn't even really matter, does it? I'm not going to turn it in.
I'm not going to do them.
Well, boys.
I don't feel like it.
Yeah, Jesus.
That's on tape. So on today's episode, we discuss the most relatable movie of all time to those who have worked in corporate America, a movie that single-handedly made Swingline start making red staplers again. Our very first Jennifer Aniston movie, and the movie that is responsible for bringing the word ass clown into existence. We're, of course, talking about 1999's Office Space.
Well, dang it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another nostalgic journey to the past with The Confused Breakfast. Sit back, relax, and enjoy wherever you are in the world. Take it away, boys.
Well, if you are new to this podcast, we're going to be reviewing Office Space scene by scene with a modern eye.
As me.
But in order to do that properly, we must first dissect it with pure nostalgia. Let's start with AJ on this one. AJ, tell us the first time you saw this movie, what your thoughts were, and what your nostalgic rating was.
All right. So I've said this kind of in a similar way, but this is the most iconic of all the late night Comedy Central movie premieres.
Yes.
And the commercials were relentless when they were going to be showing Office Space on Comedy Central. I mean, relentless. It had everything from him dropping the fish guts onto the papers and Lumberg and just all the stuff, right? I finally remember just submitting to Comedy Central, like, okay, I'll watch it. And I did, and there's no reason that I should have found this movie as funny as I did. I mean, no reason whatsoever. But it was hilarious to me. And in the way of like, oh, is that what corporate America's like? Or I bet corporate America sucks.
Yeah. I'm never getting a job.
I'm working for the man.
And, you know, come to find it. So I end up really enjoying it. And then I find out that, oh, it's Mike Judge.
Yep.
Oh.
Got it. That's why it's
funny. Why it's so damn funny. Because I saw this way after like watching like King of the Hill.
Of course, yeah.
Like Beavis I didn't see this beforehand. I watched Beavis and Butthead, and even Beavis and Butthead was like a little bit like too far out for me. But then for some reason King of the Hill was like right on par for this like that little comedy nook, you know. Office Space fell right into it, and he's gone on to do obviously other amazing things. I loved this movie. It was wonderful. I'm going to give it, I'll give it an 8.3.
8.3 for age. Sean, what about you, man?
Same for me, dude. Comedy Central. Late night, you would get done with the block of Dave Chappelle, Rio 911, and South Park, and it would bring up ads of, yeah, we're playing the Office Space later tonight, and later tonight means like 9 o'clock, which is way past my bedtime at that time, but I would stay up and watch it and then be tired as hell for school the next day, and I didn't care. Loved it. I'd probably give it, at the time, 7.5.
So I definitely was not in corporate. I will tell more stories later about my corporate America experience, but I had not yet gotten into that. So I didn't quite understand the jokes. My dad and my mom used to love this movie, especially my dad went through some job trouble like in the mid-2000s where he was like shoved out by his corporate America job and not trying to find new work and just so jaded. And this movie literally brought him and my mom like so much comfort, just being like, ah, finally somebody understands, you know? And so they really loved it. I thought it was funny. I really enjoyed the music a lot, but I didn't fully get yet what was happening. So I'm going to call it just a 6.8. We got Bud Larson on this as an executive producer. He says, I remember my sister told me about this movie sometime in the early 2000s. She was living in the Twin Cities at the time. She was working for a company at their corporate offices. From the TPS reports to people yelling and hitting the printer, PC load letter, what the fuck does that mean? To people just hating their jobs. Office Space was the movie for corporate America, just like the movie Waiting is for the service industry. Great point. Plus, the movie was directed by Mike Judge. For any kid that watched MTV in the 90s, knew Mike Judge was behind Beavis and Butthead. I was still in college when I originally saw this, so I didn't get all the references, but I enjoyed the movie. So very much like Bud, he is going to be a 7.6 on the nostalgic rating. That is a 7.55 for us. And, you know, that's pretty good. That's actually going to fall by itself in the 47th spot, just below Wayne's World, just above Spaceballs.
It's perfect.
Is how we feel about that nostalgically.
Amen.
But now we're never going to talk about that again.
Nope, forget
it. Because we're going to rip that away. We're going to talk about it with a modern day eye. We're going to start with Sean. We're going to learn all the important details of the movie. What do you got, Sean?
Hey, how's it going? Let's do this.
That's
produced
Sean right
there. By Michael Rotenberg and Daniel Rappaport. Based off the Milton cartoons by Mike Judge. Cinematography by Tim Snusted.
Yeah.
Also did Suburbia, Critters, Idiocracy, and a few movies that we have covered, Teen Wolf, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and The Wedding Singer. Music by John Frizzell, edited by David Rennie, written and directed by Mike Judge. Cast, Ron Livingston, Jennifer Aniston, David Herman, A.J. Nadeau, Diedrich Bader, Gary Cole, Richard Riley, Alexander Wentworth, John C. McGinley, Orlando Jones, Joe Bays, Paul Wilson, Greg Pitts, and Stephen Root. Based off Mike Judge's cartoon comedy shorts that appeared on SNL called Milton. Much of the inspiration came from Judge's actual experience working menial office jobs, even having a coworker that would say things like, they moved my desk 3 times last month, one more time and I will quit. Judge also had a neighbor that was a mechanic and made more money than him and had more flexible hours. Producers had suggested that Judge set the film around Wall Street, but Judge insisted that it be set anywhere where there was office buildings that all looked alike and they were surrounded by the same restaurants at the same time. Judge had a deal with Fox and sent the script to executives trying to get it made. The studio loved it and wanted a lighter subject matter for their releases going against movies like Titanic. David Herman was the only actor Judge had in mind. Yeah, David Herman was the only actor Judge had in mind for the role while writing and was happy with the casting of Stephen Root. The producers at first did not want to cast any major stars because of the budget, but relented, and after the success of Good Will Hunting, they suggested casting Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. I mean,
oh my God.
When that movie came out, they're like, we got to get them. Like you every movie wanted them.
Let's put them in this movie. I bet they'd be good.
I bet they'd be really good. We'll set it in Boston.
Yeah.
But that did not work out. Ron Livingston's agent asked for an audition, and he got the part. Kate Hudson read for the part of Joanna, but Jennifer Aniston was cast due to her popularity and the film needing a recognizable face.
Yep, they needed one, right?
Got to. Judge wrote more parts for her to enhance her character more than just a love interest, adding the flair scenes with the boss. Principal photography began in May 1998 and shot in Texas. This being Judge's first live-action film, he had to learn lenses and angles very quickly. The film being shot in Texas, the temperature rose to 100 degrees and smoke was in the air from fires in Mexico, which made DOP postpone the opening traffic shots. The studio at first were not happy with the dailies they had received, saying that the film looked like it lacked energy and wanted to see Livingston smile more, not knowing that they were watching more of the beginning scenes of the film and not understanding the mundanity of the tone. Office Space was released on February 19th, 1999, and on a budget of $10 million, the film only made $12.2 million at the box office, but found its audience through home video and its long-standing stint on Comedy Central.
I did read something that apparently it might be Mike Judge credits the bad performance to the cover art, the
poster,
like the poster. And I agree, man. It's like it's one of the dumbest posters for a movie that I've seen in a long time, where it's just the guy covered in Post-it notes.
Yeah, he's like, it doesn't even have like the titular character on it.
No,
and so he just like went back and added Stephen Root as Milton, like peeking behind the guy.
And it saves it, but even then you're kind of like, eh, this is kind of dumb.
Yeah, even then it's like, yeah, this doesn't make any, it doesn't give me any insight into what I should expect from this movie.
Yeah. So, okay, well, next we got to go to AJ. He does the research for us. We talk about ratings, reviews from critics and fans alike. What do you got on this one, man?
Corporate accounts payable. Just a moment. Corporate accounts payable. This is very speaking. Just a moment. Corporate accounts payable. This is very speaking. Just
the tomato meter. Thank goodness it's saving us from that embarrassment once again. 81% certified fresh.
Hey, that's tied in the 62nd spot of any movie we've done with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Lethal Weapon, and Scream, per the critics.
I'd watch those movies right now.
Yep. I would. Well, yeah. 93%.
Take out Skeet Ulrich.
that's not my Skeet Ulrich. 93% from the audiences at Rotten Tomatoes. And this is a 7.6 at IMDb.
Tied in the 42nd spot of any movie we've done with Dazed and Confused, Fifth Element, RoboCop, and American Psycho.
Okay.
Good company.
Good company.
That's what the fans think.
American Psycho, more corporate mentality kind of thing.
Yeah, dude. Oh. Come on, man. How about Kevin Thomas over at the LA Times?
Love him.
Don't we all? Gave it a 90 out of 100. Mm. I just like this because I'm a sucker for a kind of lazily written joke. So
that's
here
what
we
he's
are.
Saying about the movie?
Yes. No.
Oh, that's what you're saying about him.
That's me reviewing his reviews.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Okay.
Bristling with shrewd observation, inspired humor, and all-around smarts. Office Space is a winner about a guy who's beginning to feel like a loser. Yeah.
This fall.
Woo! This fall.
Come on down.
Catch the season premiere of Office Space.
Rob Schneider is in office.
PG-13.
Rob Schneider is the entire office.
Is the office. Rated PG-13. let's see here. I think this is just fine. Salon. Let's go to Salon. 80 out of 100. Andrew O'Hare, no pun intended, to the magazine.
God damn it.
He's on it. He's still got it, ladies and gentlemen. Its characters and its Nowheresville setting are uncannily realized. It's not a cartoon in any sense, but an honest-to-God movie with some fine, understated acting and a human heart. I thought that's great.
That's nice.
I actually really appreciate that. There's a bad one in here. Don't worry, guys. There's a couple of them, even seems. How about Owen Gleiberman? That's a fake name. Entertainment Weekly gave it 50 out of 100. Feels cramped and under-imagined. I think Judge is capable of making an inspired live-action comedy, but next time he'll have to remember to do what he's done, what he does in his animated ones, and keep the madness popping. I guess there's some high-end stuff here, guys. This was really boring. Boring enough to not even leave a rating on it. Just say that it's really boring. This was in 2023. I saw this movie for the first time ever today. After hearing about it for several years, the movie is really not funny. I didn't laugh one time while watching it. In fact, I decided that it wasn't worth continuing to watching it. And I simply turned off the television. Maybe in the 90s it was funny, but not now, in my opinion. The movie is really unremarkable and bland. In my personal opinion, again.
Do you have to say personal opinion? Can you just say opinion?
I think
in my opinion.
I think if you're writing your own review, you don't even have to say in my opinion.
You're right.
We got it. So he says your profile name.
In my review, in my own words, this is my personal opinion on this movie.
So maybe it's not now in my opinion. It's like that's kind of like the soft, but in my personal opinion.
Personally.
I'll sign my name on this.
I'm gonna put my John Hancock on this one. This movie can be strongly skipped. There are plenty of other good movies and television shows, both recent and older, that are funny and enjoyable. The television show Silicon Valley is a great show. I recommend that one over Office Space.
Have you seen Young Sheldon?
I'm gonna die.
Can we just talk about, like,
AJ puts his phone down and he
here's the problem. Get out of here with Young Sheldon, number one. But two, the fact that you go from one Mike Judge to another Mike Judge is really fucking upsetting. It's really upsetting. It's like, I really hope that you're talking about, like, in the world of Mike Judge, you should watch Silicon Valley.
No.
You don't think he gave it that much?
Not at all.
He didn't realize what he was doing.
Correct. He's like, I really like Beavis and Butthead. That's a real director.
I'd rather you go and watch. If you want some great dry humor, go to King of the Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah, out of all of the Super Bowl commercials, my favorite was the Young Sheldon one.
Why?
Because when it came on, I'm like, God, when is the show gonna fucking? Oh, it's ending tonight.
Yeah.
Sick. Wish is granted.
I turned to my wife. I was like, nobody actually watches Young Sheldon, right? She's like, no, I don't think so.
I think they're banking on people just leaving their TVs just, on when they sleep.
People just leave it on, and they're hoping that they'll leave it on at that point, too, and be like, see, told you.
Ratings are skyrocketing.
Told you, NBC, you should have listened to us. Look at the ratings. People fell asleep at the Super Bowl. It doesn't qualify you. Okay. Last one, guys, real quick here. 10 out of 10. I'm writing this from the standard gray office cubicle. This was Bernie 4444, January 8th of 2024.
I am once again asking you to listen to my movie review.
I am once again asking you.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Sort of a real world Dilbert. All the things that we have to deal with are exaggerated. This includes office characters, getting out reports, overtime, and downsizing. Current events mixed with old tales and office lore. Mixed to create one of the best comedies around. This film, along with the Red Swing Line stapler had achieved cult status. As I look around and stand up, I can see all the personalities depicted in this movie. If anyone wanted to see a movie that mimics real life, this one, it is maybe Joe versus the Volcano. Hey. This is a much more real than 9 to 5.
Okay.
From 1980. Okay, he's just typing this really bad. Sorry, guys. Just a moment while I expand my cube.
Just a moment.
It's not even fucking funny. It's not.
He took 70%.
He's like, while I expand my cubicle, and there's like a swear word thing in here. Like, I don't know.
What?
It's just like... Why did I think this would be good? Oh, there. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. Jennifer Aniston shows her flash.
What?
That's it. That's all.
Okay. Was he writing that at his cubicle?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He definitely was. I do like that.
Yeah. It sucks so bad. Oh, it gave it a 10 out of 10.
Okay.
He really needed to share that with the world.
All right. I'm glad he liked it.
Well, my dudes, I have prepared a poem for this occasion. I would like to read it to you.
Okay.
I got this killer up inside of me. I can't talk to my mother, so I talk to my diary. I'm going off on the deep end. I found my face up to face with myself while I'm sleeping. I see your picture in my head and my handshake. You can run, you can hide, but there's no escape. My inner feelings show no mercy on my enemies. I gotta get this motherfucker before he gets to me. So in your own blood, you'll bathe. And I won't stop until I put this motherfucker in his fucking grave. And I can say this once again. You can cry, but you'll still die. There'll be no tears in the end. Here we go.
All right.
Clear. 14 clear.
Peter Gibbons heads to his job one morning and gets stuck in rush hour traffic. His company is called Initech, and upon arriving and being hassled by his bosses, he asks his work friends Samir and Michael to go grab some coffee. Upon returning, they're told by their boss, Bill Lundberg, that there will be job consultants on site to evaluate everyone's performance. This frustrates all employees, including Milton.
The traffic is too real, man. this intro nails everything about
everything
going to work, the mundanity of just little annoyances, you know. It's perfect. I love the fact that he's trying to get around the right lane that slows down, so he goes back. It's amazing.
And he should know, right? Like,
yes,
you should understand that this is how it works. If you've ever been in traffic, this implied that he does this every day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that if you're in a lane that is not moving, it's going to move.
Just give it a second.
Just pick one and stay there.
It's kind of his fault at this point.
Yeah.
I got to say, I was just in Phoenix. The traffic out there is like some of the worst in the country. And it looks a lot like this on a regular basis. Ugh. And now all they could think about, what kept me going if I ever got like stuck in some traffic, was thinking that like Samir, Michael, and Peter were in this traffic somewhere doing the exact same thing. And just like Samir just freaking out. mad. Every swear word he can think of. No one depicts the mundanity of life like Mike Judge does. No one does it like him. I can't literally think of anyone else who can do this so well like he does.
Small detail. Like he just picks up on the smallest stuff that only someone that has gone through this could understand.
Yeah.
If you tell some big Hollywood big shot writer to like write about being a small person in corporate America, it's not going to come out this way.
Yeah. No, it comes out like fucking Ally McBeal. Yeah. You know what I mean?
He actually understands
The dancing baby?
Oh, my favorite.
But like, man, like this Michael Bolton scene where he's rapping that song.
Yeah.
And he turns the volume down and he does like this and he locks his door. But then I got this killer up inside me. Like, I can't
talk to my mama, so I talk to my diary.
he's such a gangster. And I love the rap music in this. Yes. I love his choice. They had to have, I didn't read about it, but they had to have told him, no, pick different songs.
They did.
Oh, they had to.
They did a test screening and they were like, no one's going to like this. And then like, I think a lot of people didn't, but there was one like dude that came up to him and was like, I love that music. Like,
yes.
I love this movie because of the music.
And it's very juxtaposed in this.
100%.
And like, it should not be in these scenes, but that's what makes it so memorable.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's just Michael Bolton goes to work as Michael, but goes home and listens to fucking gangster rap, you know, like that's him. That's truly him. He's not him when he's at work.
Yes.
None of them are.
Yeah. He's got all of his stuff like up on the walls. Like he's got his Snoop Dogg poster, Navy SEALs, all the army stuff, like all this like super tough guy stuff, whatever. And then it's just like, it's Michael.
He's just a nerd, Initech guy.
David Herman is so underrated, I think, in our world. Of comedy. The amount of voice work that guy does, the amount of character play that he does, it's amazing. And I don't know how you cast somebody better like for a role like this. Like
all the roles, man.
Yeah, they're all cast so amazingly well. And I think that's another testament to like to Mike Judge movies and productions, essentially, you know, that He just knows how to put people into the right place in his movies, yeah. in his shows,
and his
whatever.
His dialogue does the rest.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And that's truly what it is. Like ending this whole intro credit sequence pretty much on that zap on the door handle. It's just,
oh my God.
Just the sound like,
and he knows, and it's every day. This has been the exact same morning for him every yes. single day of his life. And this is Monday, and he's been thinking about it all weekend. He hasn't even enjoyed his weekend because he's been thinking about how he was going to have to sit in traffic yeah. and how he was going to get shocked by that door on his way to a job that he hates.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you guys ever worked corporate America?
No.
Like, Sean, we talked about it, and, you know, everybody's job sucks. Yeah. Like, but there is a special feeling of being in actual hell, like working in corporate America from, like, you know, the late 90s through like maybe the late 2000s.
Talking about that true cubicle
era. Cube farms, man.
Yeah.
Like my first job out of college was just to work for this corporate America job here in Cedar Rapids. And it, like, this movie absolutely nails it. It's the worst. All you think about is when the day is going to get over, and all the, you start hearing people, they say the same things, and you yeah. hear how they answer the phone, and you, this guy always walks by at this time to go on his smoke break, and you're just like, fuck.
Cheryl always brings food in that smells horrible when she heats yes. it up.
Oh, yeah. It's Tuesday. I even know their weekly routines better than I probably know my own. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's very true. I wouldn't call it corporate America, but I would say that there's something certainly corresponding to this era, early 2000s, like late 90s, corporate America, and like late 2000s, 2010s, like retail, mm-hmm. like base jobs, because that's the world I lived in
yeah.
for a long time. And it's not a cubicle, but man, it's certainly
it's the same
reminiscent.
Sentiment.
You know what I mean? You do the same thing every single day, and it's like, The only benefit, I think, was in this case, or, you know, comparatively, is he's doing the same damn thing every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, TPS reports removing digits from banking software. Oof.
It just, yeah, every day. And I think about it sometimes. I go, man, wouldn't it be great to be like 9 to 5 again and just like go home from work and just not think about it, which I have not had for 16 years of my life. But then I remember that, yeah, you do think about it. You on Friday night, you're like, yeah, Friday night. And then all of a sudden Saturday morning, you're like, I only got one more night
yeah.
before. And then it's Sunday morning. You're like, shit, God, I got to go back to work tomorrow. Like, it eats into your entire soul of that place owning you,
or just,
and
like
you having to be there.
Him saying like, I know Lumber is going to ask me to come in on Saturday.
Yes.
I just know it. And like, even that is just like, well, now my whole week's ruined because I'm just waiting for when he asks me, and like
to then ruin your weekend.
Exactly. Right. And then like you work, well, he's got to work the whole fucking week apparently. But yeah, man, it's definitely a cubicle type kind of thing, but it's everywhere. You know, like working at a plant, like loading shit. I'm like, I don't want to go to the company meeting. I don't care what our quarterly numbers are. Who the fuck? I don't, get me the fuck out of here.
Yes.
That's all I want to do, you know.
But then they walk across to Tchotchkes.
Tchotchkes.
I mean, I've always loved Brian, the waiter, and I still love him on this rewatch. Like the timing, the comedic timing of this script of what Peter's just like, you know, some days I just want to, you know, dude, and
you sure I can't get you anything else. some shrimp fajitas or some poppers,
pizza shooters, or extreme fajitas.
Extreme fajitas.
Anytime I go to any restaurant, I always ask for that. And it's like, he just nails it. This idea of like, even the stupid ass restaurant, you drive anywhere, any big city on the X, like on the suburbs, there are giant corporate buildings surrounding a Chili's.
Illinois yeah. is filled with them.
Yes.
Like yeah. on your way to Illinois, you see so many of that. Oh, like yeah. Chili's, like Applebee's,
TGI Fridays, which is what this was kind of based off of, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That this shot Tchotchkes
it has
was.
To have been. Yeah, yeah.
But yep. That's the funny thing is those chain restaurants are the exact same thing as corporate America.
They
even kind of touch on that with her Flair stuff. Like,
yeah.
he thinks that maybe she's got this cool, interesting job, but it's still the same because she's got to deal with this shitty ass boss and these rules. And
I like yours. It's like, her outfits or anything. And it's, I think it starts to show like a lot of grass is greener,
yes,
like mentality of things. Right. And that's one of them. And I like how it kind of shows the different layers. Peter's even a little bit more enthralled of like, oh, like I like your buttons and stuff like that. And it's like, which is kind of a joke in itself because she doesn't understand why she has to wear the flare, but he's kind of enthralled with a couple buttons.
Right.
But then you have her just saying, I don't really like talking about my flare, you know? Okay. And then he says, you know, he starts talking about his job. He's like, and you know, I don't really want to talk about my job either. It's like, nobody wants to talk about their job. Nobody wants to talk about like it looks okay from the outside, but you know, from the inside, you see is all the wrong stuff with it.
Because as you're describing your job, you can just see people's eyes glaze over. You know, they don't really care either. Like,
nope.
What's your like? Do you believe in ghosts? Like, that's what I want to know. You know, that kind of shit.
Yeah,
but yeah. Like,
tell me what you do on your job.
I work.
So, what are you going to study when you get to college next year?
I collect a paycheck and I get the fuck out. That's what I do.
Yeah.
Is Gary Cole as Lumberg the most iconic comedic antagonist of all time?
It has to be.
Like, maybe Shooter McGavin is up there for me. Yeah.
But what does it for me with Gary Cole is he never. He's this level and he never changes.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole movie. There's no ups or downs in him. He is right there.
To the point of two, where like they that scene where they tow his car because he has to park in the handicap, they shot a scene of him like freaking out at them. And even he was like, Gary Cole was like, I think you should take that out because that's definitely not what Lumberg would do. You know?
Yeah.
Like, he did want to just keep him at that level.
So
the whole
passive.
Time.
I think that's hilarious. Like, you just don't want that character to go up or down from anywhere from where he's at, even when he's, you know, hypothetically having sex with Jennifer Aniston. You know what I mean? There's nothing that could excite this man.
Peter can't picture him being excited because he's never seen him excited.
Yeah, that's right.
So he's like, this is all I know of this guy. This is all I know. Dude, I'm going to start trying to implement this if we can remember it. I want shot of the movie.
Okay.
Like frame of the movie. That maybe you could just kind of freeze it and put it on your wall. I think one of the most brilliant shots of this entire movie is when they're walking back from the restaurant.
Yes.
And they walk down that little gully and back up. I don't know why. I don't know why the wide angle of that and how we all know we've seen those in those giant parking lots meant for water retention. I just love that they could have just gone a little bit further away and probably followed like an actual driveway, but they're just taking the shortest possible route to get back.
Because, you know, they did what you just said like the first like three times, and then the fourth time one of them decided not to. And then the next time one of them followed that guy, and then eventually they were all just like, yeah, why are we even going around a little bit more? Like, let's just walk through the grass.
Probably like traffic pattern in the grass.
It's
there.
The little bit of freedom that they can have. It's like a kind of rebellious, walking through
point.
The grass.
It's so true.
It's a great point.
Instead
it's
of the
so
guided sidewalk for them, you know.
No, we're rebels.
Yeah, like they just want to get there and back somehow. It's not even worth it to go around that little bit further. It's like, no, we just need to get the fuck
and
back.
Tom can't make it up. He has to like kind of crawl.
See, that's what I want. That's what I want is that like that artsy kind of photo is like them basically up the thing and Tom struggling. Like, that's what I want. That his tie kind of blowing
freeze
in
frame.
The wind. Oh, give me that freeze frame, please.
There is a moment though. They do get back and all this talk about getting the memos
TPS
and people
reports.
Talking about TPS reports, especially when they go to like the meeting room at one point and on the whiteboard behind it says, it's like this really complicated flow chart.
Yeah.
And at the top of it says planning to plan.
Yes. Right.
And if that does not describe the mundanity and the over of how many people need to work to get this job working in corporate America, they need to teach you how to plan to plan.
Nothing gets done.
No,
nothing ever gets especially like the three people that come over to what's his damn name in the movie? Peter. The three people that come over to him is like, Well, you did. Did you get that memo? We need you to correct this. Yeah, I got it.
And then they have to explain it. Well, you see, because we like to have the report.
Yeah.
I know.
It's their idea. You know, they're talking themselves. They don't, like, they have no point. The higher-ups never listen to you, no matter what. Or they just bullshit their way into, like, winning the exchange. Yeah. Or, like, telling you, like, doing a boss thing, giving you a direction.
And being the one that ends the conversation. Yes. Yes. Okay, exactly. I will see you later.
It's important that they end the conversation. And it also makes me think that they have had this conversation now rehearsed for how many cubicles they had to stop by
to say that to
many people. Yes. It wasn't just Peter that forgot the cover sheet on the TPS reports. And this is another thing. You know, later on we do hear, maybe this is a question for later. Later on we hear that Peter has 8 bosses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what one of these things is that, so he's Lumberg, and then you've got
the second guy that comes by.
Yep, Dom is his name, and then he gets a phone call. He says, "Yes, I have the memo." No, so that's like the third boss. It makes me wonder if like Samir and Michael are technically his superior. Oh, in some maybe way.
It might be
like
what's
it makes
this I hear
me
about
think.
TPM floors?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's do what it was. And then Samir's
why
like,
"Why would they
hey,
know about it?"
Hey, yeah. Yeah, you didn't get that memo? So they had to talk to him about it too.
I'll tell you one thing that is weird about watching movies from 25 plus years ago. It's the fact that no one has any cell phones. Obviously, nowadays, we're glued to our phones. We need them to survive. That's what makes it so frustrating when, A, you're getting ripped off by these overpriced wireless providers with their fine print contracts, and you end up with a ridiculous bill every month, and B, it never even works right, always dropping service when you need it the most. I've tried 4 different service providers in the last decade, and none of them have fixed any of these problems for me. So when I first heard about Mint Mobile offering premium wireless starting at $15 a month, I thought, what's the catch here, Ryan Reynolds? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't a catch. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Before I switched over to Mint Mobile, I was paying $400 a month for 2 lines. Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for $15 a month, and that plan comes with unlimited talk and text plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. It's flexible too. Choose from 3, 6, or 12-month plans and say goodbye to a monthly phone bill. Mint Mobile gives you the best rate whether you're buying for one or a family, and at Mint, families start at 2 lines. That's it. You and your special someone, boom, here's a family plan for Valentine's Day. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all existing contacts. It took me 5 minutes to sign up and completely switch over. And the best part, I didn't even have to go to one of those dumb stores, wait around for an hour while the new guy who just started working there couldn't figure out how to work his iPad. Switch to Mint Mobile. Join the cool kids who like to save money. Get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free. Go to mintmobile.com/confused. Mintmobile.com/confused. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/confused. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Let's get on to scene 2. So Peter hangs out with his neighbor Lawrence that night. On Friday, Peter's asked by his boss to work all weekend. He dejectedly leaves and meets his girlfriend Anne at an appointment with a hypnotherapist. The hypnotherapist gets Peter into a very relaxed state but suffers a fatal heart attack before he can bring him out of it. The next morning, Peter ignores his alarm clock, blowing off working on Saturday and Sunday. Anne breaks up with him on Monday. Instead of going to work, Peter goes to Tchotchke's and finally asks Joanna out to lunch.
We have to talk about arguably, maybe not arguably, but my personal favorite character in this movie is Lawrence.
Hands down.
You thought we were going to argue about that?
He's just, I don't know, man. Like, there he is.
He's on it. Dude.
With a case of the Mondays. Case of the Mondays right there.
That's our Kanga Cooler.
Shout out to Kanga Coolers and Cricket Golf.
Yep.
Telling you, those dudes, they did it right. That is Lawrence with a case of the Mondays.
They decided to choose the greatest characters of all time, and they chose Lawrence from Office Space.
Yeah,
correctly.
It's truly like one of the best casting one of the best written side characters ever. And like,
honestly, sorry to interrupt, but fine. I honestly feel like that's where Mike Judge shines.
Yeah.
Diedrich Bader as this guy is amazing. And these types of characters that you're talking about. Yes, please.
Like,
continue.
Where the hell have you seen this guy? The Drew Carey Show. That's the only place
it wasn't much leading into this. It was that's probably his most popular.
Napoleon Dynamite. He finally made into, obviously later on, but yeah,
dude, it's just amazing. And like the introduction of him is that like, he can hear Peter through the wall. They can hear each other through the wall.
Can we just pretend just like we can't hear each other?
If you want to talk to me, then just come over.
the fact that you need a bottle burner. No, thanks, man.
The tiniest things.
Argument that he is like the most hangoutable person in any movie we've done. Like, I want to have him as my neighbor because, like Sean said, he brings his own fucking bottle openers. Yeah. He's such a kind-hearted guy. He drinks Miller Genuine Draft bottles.
There you go.
He is genuinely offended when he asks if someone would ever ask him if he has a case of the Mondays.
I believe he gets your ass kicked for saying something
like that. That might be like my most iconic thing maybe from this movie is just his deadpan take of just No, I believe you get your ass kicked for saying something like that.
And he looks like he's been waiting his entire life for someone to ask him the question of what he would do with $1 million.
Yeah, true.
Because he, like, if you ask me right now, hey, what would you do with $1 million? I'd be like, oh, I think I'd pay off some debt, and then I think I'd buy a really cool car, and then I might go on vacation. I don't know. He's like, Two chicks at one time.
I'll tell you what I do, man. Two chicks at once at the same time. That's what you do. You do two chicks at the same time. Mm-hmm. Always wanted to do that.
Fucking A, man.
What would you do? I mean, besides two chicks at the same time?
It's
so fucking I want him as my neighbor so bad, man. It brought up
a
question.
Chick looked like a hand.
Sorry, I'm working on the new McDonald's over by.
Got a little drop. Wake my ass up at 6 a.m.
Got a new drywall job over at McDonald's down there. 40-minute drive.
Las Galinas.
Las Galinas.
Yeah, I'm doing the drywall up there at the new McDonald's.
He's so good.
There's like a sultry pride to him in every aspect of his life.
He really digs himself, man. And I love it too.
Yeah. Drywall up there, do McDonald's.
But that's the coolness of it is like it really like makes Peter kind of yearn for whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. And I agree with him. Like, I have friends that are in the trades and stuff like that, and there's a cool factor to what they do. Like, they're actually doing something,
yeah,
and they're proud of what they do. Where none of us are. We're like, what the?
I there's a line from a band called The Bled where they have a song called "Smoke Breaks," and I believe it's about like mundane jobs and shit like this. Where there's a line in there that says, "You see the movement of the product, but the product doesn't move anyone." And I'm like, that was my time at Nordstrom. I was like, they're just doing the same thing every day, and there's a first, second, and third shift. We're not seeing the effect of any of this, you know. Whereas like,
you're actually causing problems.
There are jobs out there where you complete a project, you know.
Yes.
And that feels good. And I'm sure Lawrence taken from that same aspect.
Yeah.
What this movie really hits home, like there's the funniness of it, but there's like the serious nature of it too, where it's almost poetry. Like they're at this this hypnotherapist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we just learned from Peter how much he hates his job and how much, you know, he's got such a great thought. Like, you know what? For $1 million, I wouldn't do nothing. Yeah. And we all can relate to that. But when he's sitting at that couch and he says, "So I was sitting in my cubicle today and I realized ever since I started working, every single day of my life has been worse than the day before it. So that means that every single day you see me, that's the worst day of my life. What about today? Is today the worst day of your life?" Yeah.
Man, that's messed up.
Like that is poetry.
Yeah.
In a way of like really letting you understand that, like, I tell that to my daughter all the time. She's crying about something. I'm like, "This is the best day of your life.
This is the best day of your life.
It's going downhill from here."
Yeah.
And she's like, "What do you mean?"
Yeah.
But like, it really, that is a sad sentiment.
Yeah, and I mean,
that is captured.
You know, like these jobs can be fucking horrible and hell sometimes, but like, if you don't like it, it's on you.
Correct.
Yeah. Like, you got to get out of there, man. You know, like, you got to make a change. Only you can do that, you know. I mean, everyone wants their quit story and shit, but I don't know. You if it's making you unhappy, like, what would you do about if someone was, like, calling you fat every day or some shit? You'd probably get them out of your life.
Yes.
Same thing with that job. You just got to get rid of it.
Yeah. Did you find it weird that there were other people in their therapy session?
Yeah, that's weird.
That was the first time I ever was like, wait, okay, wait. So you want me to be really honest in front of not only you, but also your friends that we're never introduced to?
Yeah, your friends. And first you just sit there, and then you just leave, make me feel weird in front of my friends. It's like they're your friends in this therapy session.
Basically just for Peter.
For Peter, I guess. Yeah. It's like group personal therapy. I don't know what's going on.
Sounds
here.
A little weird.
Yeah. It just seems strange, I guess. I don't know. I thought about that too, and I was like, why are they there? There's never an explanation.
They never say a line either, do they? I don't think they say a word.
Not until he keels over. but yeah, that's really it.
I do have a...
Hit it!
If we were on a train to go punch a face, I'm on board.
That's what I'm talking about.
This might be jumping it slightly, but again, how he nails corporate life. Anytime they're in a giant meeting in the office, there's all the different characters, but the head nodder.
Yes.
And you know that was a specific directive to say, I need you to over-enthusiastically nod at everything the boss says. We've all seen it. My first day of real estate class 16 years ago, there was a guy in the front row that was just going, uh-huh, uh-huh. And he'd even turn around and go, you guys getting this? Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah, I know that.
It's like, you are distracting.
Shut up. Yeah. Stop agreeing. We all hate you and you hate everyone. Yeah. Is this your first day? What is going on? Punchable face. Okay. And he nails that. That is a person in everyone's office. Anyone listening right now knows who that is in their office.
Yeah, that's very true.
Damn, who am I punching?
That's a little tough. You don't, and remember, you don't have to.
I don't have to. Boy, I'm going to punch.
You want to punch the TV executive for putting boobies on TV for an infomercial?
No.
Okay, cool. Just checking.
I want to punch.
What if your kids are watching?
I want to punch the Case of the Mondays lady.
Oh.
Yeah.
Case of the Mondays?
Just the face she
makes.
Because
she's best friends with that, Nodder.
Yeah,
you know, and they're like a little click team.
We love it here.
You know. I also like when they introduce the Bobs, you can see Tom's reaction. He's like peeking over his cubicle. He's like, fuck.
Is he really?
I didn't notice that.
I think my most punchable is corporate accounts payable.
Yeah, good call.
Because she's the same one who also says to Milton, now Milton, be sure to pass along so we get everyone gets a piece. When I was told,
I want the lady next to him
who took the last piece. Okay, yeah. Cool. Who didn't pass?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Fucking bitch.
Good call.
Just
man.
Pass.
Just pass. what do we think of the Bobs? John C. McGinley in this, I think, is next to Lawrence as the best side character in this whole movie. I think his, especially his reactions, are so good. Like just like. You know, like that kind of shit. It is so cringy, but so good.
When you get to it later, when he gets pissed off, and the other guy's like, "I got it," and he holds it back, and he's just kind of. You're right. Maybe his facial expressions might be some of the best acting we've seen.
That's why
in 3 years,
I think this movie is like superbly edited as well because they know what they got. You know, like, you can call me Mike, and then just like. It's like you Excuse come me, back what? To that reaction. It's so fucking solid.
That's why, like, that's the other thing is everybody in these places. That's why I put on these. I brought these glasses back out. Everyone has on the same pair of glasses.
Yep.
Like essentially, right? Everyone's dressed the same. Everyone,
even though
has
there's not a dress code,
same terrible demeanor that just kind of like is just except for Naughty McNodderton, mm-hmm. And he's just And like everybody just feels lifeless in these places. And I just want so bad for anybody to take advantage of Hawaiian Shirt Day, you know, like, but when you've got John C. McGinley, like him coming through as the first Bob, By the way, even the name is perfect. Bob Slidell. Is, it's like the name Slidell is just like, yes, I get it.
He's wearing like suspenders that were those old belts. Like the belts with the intertwined ropes. He's wearing those as suspenders?
What? He's just got it down, man. He's got it down so well. He's got the
uniform down. You know?
He's got it down so well, and it's everything that comes across that guy's face. And then his other... Well,
the other guy's equally as good,
He is. Somehow he just gets outshined by John C. McGinley. Well, and like he has that moment, apparently...
Paul Wilson's his name.
Paul Wilson. Yeah. Some of the lines that are phenomenal, he improvised.
Mm-hmm. The Naga?
Yeah.
The Naga line?
Naga, not gonna work here anymore. It's like, yeah.
And if you go back knowing that and watch it, watch John C. McGinley. Like, it's a genuine, like,
he laughs. He laughs.
Fucking brilliant, man. But this so plays good. On the dream of everyone. Like, I think this is why my dad and mom loved this movie so much, is the dream of that, of literally just... sleeping in and ignoring your boss's phone calls, knowing that they're mad that you're not there and not even caring.
Yeah.
This carefree attitude that he has is unbelievable. And then his ability to just go in the office and just walk right out again. Like, it's the dream that anybody that's ever worked in corporate America has to just be like, I don't fucking care.
Yeah. It's kind of like being like you just kind of freshly or recently quit a place.
Yeah.
And you kind of go back in because some of the people know you, and you stop in to say, hey, you want to go get lunch? Or, oh, I forgot this thing. They called me about it and I just need to pick it up and whatnot. Anyway, how's it going here still?
Look what I'm wearing and what you're wearing.
Man, I'm wearing normal clothes, not work clothes. Like, it's that kind of feeling that he's walking through with almost. Like he quit mentally a long time ago. But in the end, it's in his brain, yes, that's the way it is. But it's like, dude, you still work here. Like, what are you doing? Like, and to not have that fear, you know, is it must be very freeing, I guess.
Oh, my God, yeah. I love that aspect. And that I think that's why this movie is, like, so cathartic, too. Like, as your parents thought of it. It is. Everyone wants to do that.
Yeah.
Like, everyone wants to fucking just have a quit story or just be like, fuck you. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm leaving at 3, you know, like, whatever. I don't care. I think it's weird that this movie is out in 99 too, because we get Fight Club, we get The Matrix.
Yeah, it's all which, kind of dealing with
like,
that.
Like, even when Peter is like peeking up and trying to see if Lumberg is coming, it's like reminiscent of Neo looking for the agents.
Is
you know?
This The Matrix?
Oh, wait.
Just is there a glitch in The Matrix? Was that hypnotist Neo, dying a glitch in The Matrix?
Does Neo work at Initech?
Ooh.
He's at a different office. He's at the downtown office.
He's at the downtown office. I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm what just saying, guys.
That's canon.
What do we think about Jennifer Aniston in this movie? Because, you know, obviously she's the star power. She is absolutely one of the most well-known actresses in the entire world at this point.
Yeah.
Not even based on anything movie-related. This may have been one of her first couple movie roles she was ever in, because she was in the heart of Friends at this point. And she still is just one of my favorite actresses. I mean, she's just so solid at what she does.
I think she knocks it out of the park.
She doesn't do anything wrong.
No, I think this is one of her best movie roles that she's had.
Yeah.
Like, and I'd like to see more of her in this too, but like she plays it so perfect, like especially their like first meeting.
what AJ was talking about.
Yeah, I want to take you to lunch. Like, she's nervous on a first date, you know, it's kind of weird that she's there on work time, you know, wearing her uniform in a different restaurant.
I get it.
It's perfect. I like it a lot.
I think she plays it just really, really well. And I think even back to like when he walks in for the first time and he's like, hi, I'm Peter. Like, hey, yeah, how can I help you? And it's like, well, what are you doing for lunch today? And she starts going through, it's like, well, our specials are like black and chicken, and like they're actually all right there. I'm sorry. Like, it has those little those little mannerisms that are very much like, I can't do this right now. Like, I don't care. I already know I'm going to talk to you about my flair. So, like, that's what's on her mind. I have to go. Bye. Like, that small interaction told me everything I needed to know about her performance in this movie and how it was going to come out.
Yeah.
It was great.
Well, let's move on to scene three. So when Peter heads into the office to grab his things, he's called in to meet with the Bobs. It goes much better than the other employee meetings. Meanwhile, the Bobs are meeting with upper management and agree to fire Milton. When Lumberg questions their approval of Peter, they begin questioning Lumberg. Peter spends the next several days hanging out with Joanna. He shows back up at Inatech and is being promoted, but finds out Samir and Michael Bolton are being fired.
I have my shot of the movie. I want Lumberg's, the close-up of Lumberg's mouth as he mouths
That's a really good one.
And like have like a little word come out of his mouth.
You mean where they keep turning around like laughing at him?
Needs to be like one of those like old mid-mod cartoon type things with the serious halftones, polka dot ladies and stuff like that, but then it's just stapler, big old word.
Stapler. Love it. And we already talked about this first meeting with the Bobs, but like This, this is just like poetry to me. This whole, the thing is, Bob, it's not that I'm lazy. It's just I don't care.
Don't care.
And he's so laid back. And what does he say? So now if I work my ass off and Inatech ships a few extra units, I don't see another dime. So where's the motivation? And here's something else, Bob. I have 8 different bosses right now.
Beg your pardon?
8, Bob.
8. So that means when I make a mistake, I have 8 different people coming by to tell me about it. That's my only real motivation, is not to be hassled. That and the fear of losing my job. But you know, Bob, that will only make someone work just hard enough to not get fired.
Yeah, line, my only real motivation is to not be hassled. It's just like,
it sums
just getting through it.
It sums it all up so eloquently somehow.
Yes.
Thank you, Mike Judge, and your writers.
Like, they made the mistake. When I was in corporate America, I had to like get an application for someone's insurance, and I had to key the information from the application into like the computer system. And they made the mistake of telling me that I'm supposed to do 5 per hour. Like that is on the average at the end of the day, they expect that all employees should do 5 per hour. So I went back to my desk and I was like, okay, so that's 1 every 12 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go really fast and go 101, 5. And then I'm going to stop working and just be on the internet and picking my fantasy football team until 201. Here's 5.
Yeah.
And that plays off this thing that like I just don't care. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to do just enough to not get fired.
Yep.
Because it's true. There when there's no motivation of we want you to do better. We're asking you to do more work for no reason. No reasoning behind it. So where's the motivation, Bob? Like, that's literally
it. Like, what profit sharing do is, I don't know, Bob. Like, you know, he still doesn't. Like, maybe.
I don't know. You know, it's been really great talking. I got to go.
No, believe me, the pleasure's all ours.
All on this side of the table. Huh?
But that is so true. So like, nobody really gave a shit about me. I was there for a year, and nobody knew who I was. But the minute that I knew, I had a three-month gap between when I knew I would have passed my real estate courses and started real estate. So I had 3 months to just continue working to make money.
Yeah.
I tried to get fired. I showed up late. I grew my first beard ever. I didn't tuck my shirts in. I would leave early. I'd take long breaks. They actually started noticing me and being like, Mike, you know, we want to tell you, like, you're doing a really good job here. And like, they started to offer me like promotion stuff. As I was being so bad at my job, the guy, when I put in my 2 weeks, he goes, oh man, we're really going to miss you. And then he comes back over to my desk, my immediate boss, about 5 minutes later, and slides me a piece of paper and says, we're prepared to offer you this for a salary now if you'll stay. And it just plays on this. Like he's the worst employee now and they love him.
Like why do you think this is? I have like these questions. Like, why do you think it is that, or what do you think it is that they want to promote Peter? Do they just like him? Is it really that they don't do any work themselves and can relate to him? Like, what do you think that is? Like, do you they just recognize the failing up?
I have a theory about it. Do you have anything on
No, I think it's that I think he's that he's actually just the most real, relatable
he's just
person.
Just being real, and it's shocking to them.
Well, and because like let's pick on Michael Bolton here. Hold your thought.
Okay.
Michael Bolton is a shitty employee because all he had to do, we know he hates Michael Bolton, the no talent ass clowns, but all he had to do was That is interviewing number one. If they're like, we love Michael Bolton. He's like, dude, that's why my parents named me Michael Bolton. We're the biggest fans. I love everything. Mm-hmm. You lie. And you say, yeah. Like when he goes, call me Mike. Excuse me, what?
Yeah.
I had the same reaction. I'm like, what are you doing, bro? Yeah. No,
I'm not even going to just call you Michael. I'm going to call you Michael Bolton.
Yes, because you don't actually say Michael. He's a two-name guy. Michael Bolton,
he's a two-namer. He is
a two-namer.
You're 100% right. You never just call him Michael.
Yes, and that's my theory is that everybody that comes in just sucks. And Peter's actually like, it's like the old, I'd like to have a beer with him. Like I think that's what that's how they're viewing him.
Yeah, I think that. It comes around as these guys, if they are consultants for essentially downsizing, right? And that's kind of what their motivation actually is. So they're coming in to basically for the efficiencies of the company. That means they have to find those people who are in the middle of a process and get rid of them. Bob Smikowski or whatever his name is. Tom Smikowski. Yeah. And that's him in a nutshell. I have people skills. What's wrong with you? What is wrong with you people? Just freaking out about every little thing. And he's just on the edge constantly. And it's like, he can't even explain what he really does. He knows what he does, but he can't explain it to anybody else, right? So anyways, like you have to be able to weed these people out.
Yeah.
If you just latch on to Peter, he's going to give you your golden goose information, whatever you need.
That's very true.
To actually help them. Yeah, he's very honest with them. He's like, wait, you have 8 different bosses? Name them all.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what they're thinking.
That's true.
In my thought. And I'm like, yeah, they've got to work their butts off to go through all these Michaels and these Toms and whatnot to figure out. He's like, well, who are your 8 bosses? What else do you do? What is a TPS report? That seems meaningless.
I think Tom's one of them.
Yeah.
And because to be fair, Tom definitely should be fired.
You're right.
Like his job, they just kind of fire him. His job is irrelevant.
There is a point, right, where now, so I went back and forth on Tom specifically, right? Because, Mike, he's got the same argument that you would have in this scenario. You have people skills, damn it.
Okay. Yeah. So slide me into a different position.
So it's like, okay, but what would you say you do here? And like all he could say, but keep in mind, let's reverse it for a second. What if you just had customers calling up your engineers?
No, he is 100% correct.
He's the middleman.
You do not let the engineers talk to
them. Don't let them talk because then you're taking away time from engineers who are working on engineer things.
And they're also not good at talking to
people. They also don't want to talk to people.
Sorry, engineers out there.
They don't want to talk to people. They don't.
Actually, I'm joking. No engineers listen to this show.
That's right.
I was apologizing. Yeah, there's
definitely
no
audio engineers.
Oh, shoot. You're right. You nailed it. Yep.
I think that's what it is, though. Okay. And I honestly think, though, it's like, well, if you don't have Tom, then you have them call. Well, why can't the customers just take them directly to the engineers? That is actually another thing. That's bad. That's a bad way of looking at it from this consultant view. Just an FYI.
I did want to point it out. Sorry, hang on to that. The Jarrett Layoff actor database for Confused Breakfast. John C. McGinley is our number one in this one.
Nice.
This is his third role.
Third. We got
The Rock.
Point Break.
And Point Break.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty, I mean, like I want more. All of a sudden, I want more John C. McGinley.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could see more of like this type of character, I think, in Scrubs probably.
Yep.
But yeah, he's, like I said, I think the second best actor.
Underappreciated. Yeah. And that is saying a lot. If you're the second best actor in Office Space, my God.
Wow.
And that's a big if.
That's a big pathetic.
So good.
What were you saying, Sean?
Mike Judge's Stan is great.
Yes.
You need 15 pieces. You do want to express yourself, don't you? It's just like every time you
Mike
can hear,
Judge himself.
Yeah, every time you hear him talk, you can hear Beavis and Butthead all in the like, and Hank. You can hear them all. It's so cool.
There's an interview out there where he's giving like a commencement speech or talking to a group of people, and he tells the story of his corporate America life that led to this. Dude, just listening to that man talk, he's so brilliant.
Yeah.
I love everything Mike Judge has ever done.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and speaking of him right now, like, this is his first live-action film. And I think we said it in Heather's too, where if you just have a solid script, man, just shoot the script. Like, you don't need any flair, especially 15 pieces. Huh. Like, you don't need any like spectacular moving, like tracking nope. shots or anything. You just lock the camera off.
There's nothing in
on
this,
your
man.
Brilliant fucking actors yeah. who are doing your brilliant, dialogue. That's all you got to do. Like they say, directing is 90% casting, and yeah. you nailed it, you know? Like, you already got it.
Well, they made a great choice with Ron Livingston, who, by the way, is from our hometown yeah. of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He was born and raised here. Ron, if you're listening.
Ron.
Sponsor us.
Sponsor us. Ron Livingston was the perfect choice, because if you would have done anybody else, it would have been maybe, like, too much star power. Like, yeah. we needed that just everyday, random-ass dude who just we can all relate to.
Yeah.
And this is the first thing I had ever seen him in. And I think yeah. it's probably one of his most well-known things.
Oh,
but,
definitely. Yeah.
But, man, I mean, they nailed the casting with him in this movie. Mm-hmm.
It really was, like, for how often do you get it in, like, a TV show or something that you're like, oh, I just – and then they go in – like, a TV actor will go and do a movie role. It's like, I can't see you as anything nope. other than that. Like, John Krasinski will always be Jim from The Office,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
No, hands down. You could do the scary movies that he's done already and stuff. Nope, that's just Jim from Jim. The Office doing that. I got it.
He just did 70 pounds worth of muscle, yeah. and now he's really hot. It's yeah. like, no, it's still from The Office.
It still works in that same office. But like Ron Livingston somehow did that with this role. I have a tough time watching him yeah. as in anything else.
Yeah.
I've watched him in a lot of different roles and he's always good in them.
Of course.
But I can never see him without immediately popping Office Space first. Yep. You went through that office before you got here. Like yeah. that's all I know. So, oh man, it's so strange.
Well, let's go on to scene four. So Peter meets his friends to tell them the bad news, and they develop a plan that will slowly scam the company and make them money. They execute the plan right before Michael and Samir are escorted out. They enjoy a session of destroying a copy machine. Meanwhile, Milton is moved to the basement, and his stapler is taken by Lumberg. That weekend, Peter explains to his plan to Joanna on the way to Smithkowski's party. At the party, Peter receives bad news about Joanna. He confronts her, and she leaves.
The whole like montage of Damn Feels Good to Be a Gangster is amazing. Like him hanging out with Joanna now, yes. you know, just taking down his fucking one part of his yep, cubicle to see outside.
Gotten a fish.
Yeah, just. It's amazing. And that's like it goes back to the catharsis of doing this, you know, at your job or whatever, you know. Endlessly rewatchable because of that. You like to see this kind of thing get slapped back in the face mm-hmm. of these people, you know?
Well, picture the time when this came out. Like, they chose to use... We said how brilliant the music choices are in this movie, but Damn It Feels Good to Be a Gangster. Even the Die, Motherfucker mm-hmm. Steal when they're killing the copy machine.
Yeah.
This would have been like a Blink-182 song or something like that.
yeah.
If they would have had the parlance of the times.
Oh, my gosh, you're right.
And it just... I'm sure it would have worked. I'm sure it would have been fine because we love like American Pie. Like, oh, I love when Blink-182's in that, but this was the right choice.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
And it just fits so well.
It gives this movie so much more personality
yeah.
because of what the subject matter is, like the cubicle life. You know, it's just
yeah.
completely what we say it all the time, the goddamn word. Juxtaposed.
Yeah.
It's the complete
That's my
opposite.
Favorite word.
Yeah, it's we love it.
I say that word a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. I was trying to think about the lead in up to this point, and it's that meeting that he has with Bill Lumberg.
Yes,
and it's Bill and Dom are in there, and they're just going through. Yep, there's three more people. They can be gone.
Not
gonna
work here.
He's useless. Yeah, not gonna work here. It's like they're having that meeting, and I love this is another like very simple play on like the cameras and stuff. They swing this around, mm-hmm. and even though Dom is technically still in the room, they swing it around to the back of the Bobs from their point of view and turn this into Bill's review.
Yeah, oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, and then it's like, how much time would you say you spend with the TPS reports?
yeah.
Yeah. And like, so then you kind of realize this, and I didn't even notice this until I think it's something I had read. Apparently, we have to assume that Bill may have taken a demotion or was like realigned in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think you kind of maybe have to assume that.
Because of his parking spot. Because I always thought that maybe it was just like Peter parked in his spot or something. But apparently, I think you can read it. Like, it's no longer Bill's spot that next day.
Really? Okay, I'd have to check that.
And I'd have to check it out again, too. But, like, I read this, and I was like, that makes actually a lot of sense. Because, like, we're thinking that now Bill has been, like I say, realigned. He's becoming part of the plan for Initec.
Yeah.
and he got, and then he parks in the handicap spot right next to it instead. So I don't know. I have to take a look at this. I didn't know if you guys had seen any more of that. Uh-uh. But I thought it was an interesting take. Maybe there was some extra stuff that got cut out.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that meeting, though, with him is, again, that's John C. McGinley at his finest.
Yep.
And I think it was when you were saying, right? It's like when he says, he's like,
I can't see.
He's like,
I'll take this one. We don't like
just over animated.
His response to it too is that we don't think you're pushing Peter hard. I was like, yeah, I just don't know about that right now. I was like, what kind of fucking response is that? Like, you don't know about that right now?
Know about. He's just so excited to like tell him he's wrong. I don't know, man. I just like everything about that little meeting is like actually it's really well done. It's really well shot, and I can't imagine having like those guys in that room. It just must have made for an awesome scene.
Oh, can't imagine.
Yeah.
And then, but it's I think one of the most iconic things of this actual movie is the beating of that.
It's, you know, it's like you're saying, it's Sean, if you had to quickly say, hey, Office Space, like that's probably the first thing most people are going to come up with.
Yeah. It's
genius.
I had searched this on YouTube several times in my mid 20s. You know, I just needed to see this scene again because it was so properly executed of them like bashing this thing.
And the exchange of the downloading of the virus and it's the exchange so of the dude who plays Michael Bolton.
Oh, David Herman.
Okay, so like I love him so much, but in particular, there's one scene, dude. Come on, okay. Yes. So when the Mondays lady walks by and he goes, he looks up and she goes, yeah, and he like fourth wall breaks. He like fourth wall breaks. He looks right at the camera. I think that's the best. I think that's the best shot of the movie, man.
It's that frumpy face of his, just
because he's so excited, and then he goes. I freaking love it. I love that so much, man.
It's shot so perfectly.
All and of to get it in slow mo too. Like, it seems like he did it, like performed it in slow mo, but like it's just iconic. Like, it's so good.
Dude, and Sean, maybe you can tell me more about this, but I could not for the life of me figure out how they filmed that drunk driver crash.
Oh yeah,
where he backs. Did you ever read? I had to read about it.
One thing on the copy beating or whatever. Yeah. I knew they gave him direction to for Peter to be like the mafia don,
because he doesn't hit it,
or
does
like
he?
The leader. Like he gives them the bat, you know, and then, like he takes him back or whatever. Like it was like a mafia hit, like out in the field. I love that.
And the POV camera from like the copy machine.
Yes. Yeah. And the jittery slow motion, like the Scorsese kind of thing. It's so good. Yeah,
it's a brilliantly shot thing, and all the shit leading up to it with that same copier though.
Mm. Yeah.
The PC load letter?
Fuck does that mean?
That was
him. A real line because it actually said it, right? Like it said it on the screen and he's like.
David Herman had more things that he was supposed to be talking to Peter and Samir about.
While the machine was the paper was going through the machine. But it loaded, it got jammed.
But it would fuck up again and he'd be like, PC load letter? The fuck does that mean? They were having like real problems with that thing. Like
sounds about right.
And I think that's all the one thing that was like the extra cherry on top, the bane of their existence in their regular day to day, that they just take this thing out and destroy the thing. I don't know if he was actually like really hitting that thing.
Sure, I don't look like it.
Man, it looked like it
from the angle. I assume he was hitting a pad and they were throwing bits.
Okay,
yeah,
so good.
when Tom backs out of his driveway and gets smoked by that car.
Yeah, yeah.
So. I'm sure it's obvious to some people, but to me, that stuff blows my mind. Like, how you even think it. So what they would do is he would back out, and right when he came to a stop, that's where they would cut. he would come to a stop, get out of the car. They would put the dummy in the car, and then the car would come crashing.
Okay, so just kind of a scene cut. Okay.
Yeah, but apparently it was a windy day, so like trees would be moving.
Oh, yeah.
So they had to keep waiting for the wind to move or trying to keep doing it and over and over. That stuff is not how my brain works when it comes to filming and how people can get the right shots. Like that's so cool to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks real. It is.
And very expensive. Well, inexpensive. I mean, like nowadays they would just be green screen or whatever, you know, like they explode it probably, you know, they're just like, well, we have the one car probably, so we need to get this fucking right.
Yeah. You know? That's very true. And then, you know, tell me about this too. Like, first of all, Lumberg always has a coffee mug in his hand, even in the sex scene. And I love that they go to that extent, that every time you see him, he always has a coffee mug in his hand.
Still always has it.
But this is where it gets a little confusing to me. Like, clearly Peter is not carefree anymore. And he's like, when this whole plan comes about, he's like worrying so much about this plan and we're going to fuck over this company. When in reality, like, things are good, man. You just got a promotion and everything's great. And somebody suggested that maybe like the hypnotism wears off, that it doesn't last forever and he loses his carefree attitude. But they don't really like, does that ever get addressed?
No, not really.
Because you notice how he changes by the end of this movie. He's just kind of shitty old Peter again.
Yeah. I mean, well, in this scene, I guess, or like when they're kind of coming up with the plan, I think to me, it was like, well, now he's coming up with a scheme to get money, and that's been the problem the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just like, you need to be a regular person because that's how people relate to people. So get a job and like it enough to keep doing it, you know? Or like, what does Tom say? He says,
I used to be miserable like you.
Yeah, yeah. He's
I used to hate my job.
If you hang in there long enough, it'll be all right, you know? But like in this case, obviously we're saying that he needed to just quit and do construction or get an outside job.
He could ask Lawrence like the next day and say, hey, can I come work for you?
I think he kind of gets a little shittier and a little paranoid because he's, you know, it's the worry of
he's getting more into the job again, and now it's coming back at him.
Yeah, now he's got a task like he did in the corporate. Yeah. You know, but also that point of it wearing off is interesting too. Who knows?
Yeah, I notice what you're talking about because if he's so carefree, then why does he have to go? It's like it kind of becomes like a yes man syndrome. Like he's carefree enough to just do whatever he wants in a yes mode. And then he just kind of follows through with like the next thing he wants to go ahead and do. I mean, he's carefree enough to instigate and like ripping off the company.
Well, even just getting pissed off at Joanna for Lumberg fucked her.
Lumberg fucked her.
By the way, who is this dude?
Drew is just another part of the Comedy Central real commercial.
Comes out of nowhere. Ooh, ooh.
Yeah,
I'll give her my O face.
O face.
You know what I'm talking about.
But like, come on, hey, Peter. Drew. Like, if you're what are we assuming? Peter's like 25 years old or something like that? And Joanna's like 22, 23.
Whatever.
Lumberg's 45, 50. Like, why would that be your first thought in the world that this dude is right, that she fucked Lumberg?
Yeah.
Well, it's just like
without talking to her.
I think a lot of this movie is just like learning to not give a fuck.
Yeah. You know?
Like, it's just what did I write down here? Or what did I say to you guys? Choose your problems. You know, find what's worth suffering for you, you know,
because it's everything's going to be suffering.
Worrying about what your girlfriend or who your girlfriend has fucked is not going to get you anywhere. Yeah. It's probably going to create more problems.
And she's like probably the best girl you're ever going to get here.
Probably,
so like, just deal with it.
Like there are so many other things to be worried about, you know, being a good person to Joanna.
Yes. Know? Like maybe hanging on to Joanna.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always got a little lost at this point somehow, kind of with the movie and whatnot. And by the way, I don't know. Drew would just he might be up there with my punchable faces and stuff. He's kind of a douche.
Yeah,
like, he totally is. But that is an office character.
It's
like,
true.
It really is.
It's true. It's like, you know, they don't hang out with him ever.
No.
Like in all these times that they're all hanging out, Drew's never there.
No, you don't invite Drew.
He's got like the straps on his sunglasses too. Great little touch there.
Yeah,
Really? Make sure you wear rubber, dude. It's like, God, like
you don't
trust
him.
You just, they're the worst person like that could come up and like tell Peter this like one thing. Yep. I don't know. That right there is like, once this all kind of happens is where I definitely feel the drop off.
Start
of your,
to check out a little bit.
Yeah. And like you say, the drop off of this cool, calm, collected Peter.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The dream of being calm and cool and carefree. Yeah. Now you're like, well, now you care a lot.
Yeah.
In the final scene. So scene five, the next day, Peter finds out that their virus worked too well and the company will definitely find out about it. Knowing this whole thing was his idea, he writes a note taking responsibility along with traveler's checks to repay the debt, puts it under Lumberg's office door. He says goodbye to his friends and Joanna. He passes the Inatech building, which is completely engulfed in flames, covering up everything that has happened. Turns out it was Milton who burned down the office. He took Peter's note and money and went to a faraway resort. Peter joined a construction crew and is happier than ever. Joanna's got some issues here, though, too. You know, like earlier on, basically he says, hey, I'm thinking about quitting my job and I'm just not going to get another one and I'm not going to pay bills.
Yeah,
and
she's like, meeting, yeah.
And she's like, oh, that sounds cool. I'd like to date you. And then he basically says, hey, I am going to jail for probably a really long time. And she's like, I'll wait for you.
I got
yeah.
you.
What?
Yeah.
Have they known each other for like a week? Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's charming. Yes, I know, but
I had that thought too. I'm just like, yeah, if I went on a date with someone and they're like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do anything ever. Like,
okay.
You kind of have to.
Like, I don't know, man. Let's think back to your 20s, being 24. Huh? Yeah. Oh, wow. That sounds awesome. I don't want to do anything either.
If I go to jail, I'll never have to do anything.
Yeah.
Wow. Free food and room and board.
You know what? I never really liked wearing condoms. I don't think I'm going to do that either.
Yeah.
All right.
You might want to do that.
You're rubber, dude.
Like anything like that. It's like I've always wanted to try cocaine. I think I'm going to do that, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, she goes along with it pretty easy.
She does.
Oh, yeah.
Did you also catch, was it implied that Lumberg's door was open the whole time? That his door was unlocked?
Yeah, it had to have been.
Because like Peter slips it under the door and then he's like, oh shit, I can't get to it. But Milton walks right in.
He never once tried the actual doorknob.
Is that on purpose? I think that
has to be.
Okay.
Like I assume that it has to be. But that's the way I took it kind of right away, I guess. But what's the alternative? That
somebody came and like custodial came and unlocked everything. Yeah. I don't know, but
Milton is just this overarching. Ooh. He's been fucked with too much, so he's somehow unlocked powers.
He's got superpowers.
Milton's a demon.
Yeah.
Oh,
in the Matrix.
Yeah. Oh, he's a sentinel. He's an agent.
He's a sentinel. He's an agent in the Matrix.
It all comes back around. Oh. He caught Neo.
But like Stephen Root as Milton.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even talked
fucking
about
iconic. Like Stephen Root in anything is like, I will watch anything he does.
100%.
But this is probably his most iconic character of all time. And deservedly so. I think he plays it perfectly. Like the little mumbles he does is just like you have to watch it again and again to even pick him out too, which is nice. But like even when like they're giving out cakes, like the people to cake ratios, and he doesn't ever finish his sentence. Yeah, he just brings it up.
You know? He's kidding.
The people to cake ratio. Like he's clearly like so smart that he's like he's counted all the people in the room and he knows how many cakes there are and how many pieces it's gonna make.
Like there are just a couple of those moments, like when he's talking on the phone. He's like, and I told him when they switched to the Boston theater, I kept my swing line because the swing line didn't line up as much as the rest. And I kept the stables for the Boston theater too. Well, no, it's not okay because if they do take my stapler one more time,
then I'll
burn this place. I'll burn the place down.
Oh my God! Like yeah, he's
that's great, Milton. No, it's not okay.
Nobody listens to that guy.
Nobody
at all.
Listens to him. And like, I just, everything about him just going through that, his little world, and that last little thing, okay, but that's strong.
Even when he's in the crowd after the building's on fire, he's just like,
wow, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
A random Orlando Jones.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, he was so good.
Some of this, I agree with you guys. This is kind of where, like, I'm like, okay, I could be done in a little bit, and then, you know, it wraps up in a fair amount of time.
Dude, this is an hour and 30 minutes. When I hit play and it said an hour and 30, I was like, yeah.
Same, all right. I'm like, fuck yes. That's a comedy right there. Yeah, just a random Orlando Jones. Fun to see him. Right?
He said that he based that off of like his niece.
Oh, yeah.
And how his niece like sucked at going door to door and selling Girl Scout cookies.
My name is Lloyd.
And I want you to buy these cookies. Well,
buy these cookies.
I am a drug addict.
I do want to humanize Lumber here, though. I know that this is kind of sacrilegious here, but listen, Lumberg really is actually, he's a pretty nice guy. He dresses well. He appreciates his life. He's worked really hard. He's proud of this Porsche. He's put in a lot of time in corporate America to get to where he is. That moment in the beginning when he longingly looks at his car, that's a man that takes pride in what he owns. These people aren't showing up for work. They're not appreciating their jobs. They all suck at work. He has to run this place. He's got bosses he's got to report to. They're forgetting their TPS reports. He's got all these memos going out to him, and they're still screwing up the most mundane tasks. He doesn't even have to hang out in his office because he's always walking around talking to his employees. Doesn't even have time for emails to do the work he needs to do. He's building up morale by having big team meetings, encouraging Hawaiian shirt days. That is a good thing around the office. He isn't forcing Peter to work on the weekend. Peter can say no, but Peter always says yes. So he's like, well, that Peter guy is really, he really works hard. I'm going to ask him. I mean, Milton's taking his stapler. People are stealing his parking spot, and he never loses his cool once. I think this is a great boss, man. This is the kind of even keel guy you want running your company.
Hey, man, if you know, maybe the job sucks, but someone's got to do it.
Someone has to do it.
It could be way worse.
Oh,
it
can
could
you
be
imagine?
A fucking drill sergeant barking down your neck.
One of the bops could take that spot. Yeah. You don't want that.
No.
Just saying, you know, keep in mind, maybe they're right. He was right on some level. Michael always messes up some mundane detail, as he openly admits. This is not a mundane detail. Yeah. Like, so he always makes little mistakes like
always,
this.
Always.
So his coding and whatnot just can't be trusted.
Correct.
We're all about details at Inatech.
That's right.
You know?
I'm saying.
We can't miss those.
So it's that inattention to detail that makes us Inatech. I'm so good at this, guys. Oh, man. Yeah.
But if you've ever been driving to work and you've had the thought, God, I wish that place was just fucking on fire when I got there. We've all thought that, right?
No, I never thought that.
No, never.
I mean, you arrive and you just see like up in flames. Like, some shit has gone down and you got a lot to probably work on. But that day, you're going the fuck home, buddy.
Yes,
and that's
a
good day.
That's all right. I need a mental break anyways after watching that.
None of us are going to be working here for a long time.
Yikes. Oh, man.
Well, boys, you got anything else on Office Space here?
I'm sure there's like a million things I've missed on this, but it's just such an amazing movie, man.
Cast of characters ending, you got me.
Do it.
I love it.
That's all I want.
I've said it before. Say it again. You do that. It's a great movie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We've said it.
We have.
We'll say it again.
Yeah. We just did.
Promise. Well, we have stripped away the nostalgia. We've viewed this with a modern eye. We got to give it a modern day rating. AJ, we're going to start with you, man. What do you think about this upon modern day rewatch?
I think that this movie still holds up tremendously. Sure, it may not have the same panache that I used to think because I wanted to show it to other people so they thought I was smart and funny because I appreciated this type of comedy. But at the same time, I still think it really does 100% hold up. We kept talking about, like, you know, the best cast person or the best performance or whatnot. And honestly, I will keep going down that line over. I'll have to rehash that a bunch because there's so many amazing, like, little performances in this. Could be David Herman, to be honest. Like, just every delivery that guy has, that's the worst idea I've ever heard in my life, Tom. Everything. There's a lot about this movie that I think still holds up, translates well, and gave us the things like it does, like we have today, like Silicon Valley. So Mike Judge is a genius. The casting in this movie is perfection. The music is some of the best that you can ever ask for in a juxtaposed comedy like this. And I don't know how you say so many good things about this movie, man. It's pretty damn easy. It does fall off for me nowadays, but they wrap it up before it gets too long.
Yep.
I will tell you, I think that this movie is about the most solid 9 comedy that you could possibly have.
Damn, bro.
Yeah.
Sean, what about you?
Yeah, all sentiments I reflect. I do think that when it does start to lack, when like that feeling creeps into your soul, I guess, when you're watching this movie, but the ending is right around the corner.
Yep.
And so it's like, okay, it's whatever. Yeah, man, it is one of the best movies of 1999, and that is a stacked fucking year.
Oh,
yes. Top 10 for sure. One of the best comedies ever made, I think. You can't talk about comedies in general without talking about Office Space. The cast is incredible. I think the editing is completely underrated. And it being a first film for Mike Judge, I think it's pretty incredible. I'm going to give this a... I'm going to go
7.89. I can't say anything you guys haven't said. I mean, I laughed out loud and was having the time of my life for like the first half of this movie. I'd probably give it a straight up 9.5 based on the first half. But as it loses steam, it becomes very easy for me to be like, all right, I've seen the good parts, you know? So the second half, it becomes more of like a 7 for me. Mm-hmm. But you put those together and it's still a 8 on the money for me.
Nice.
I'm giving it an 8 modern day rating. Executive producer Bud Larson says, I couldn't find my copy on DVD, so I had to rent it on Vudu. I loved how Michael was listening to rap music in traffic, then turns it down and locks the driver's side door when the guy on the boulevard walks by his car. My experience with traffic is just like Peter. When he goes to the other lane, stops, and the lane he was just in starts moving, happens every time. Bud, you got to learn. You just stay where you are.
Stay
where you
there, man.
and always pick a car that for reference.
Right.
So that you know. You always have to pick okay, that semi, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
During the plan to scam the company out of money, Peter says you can't tell anyone, friends or family. Peter then tells his girlfriend.
Right, that's that cut.
Right away.
I love that. It's like, she's looking at him like, and then cut.
Even though the company burns down, wouldn't the money from the software they uploaded still be coming out? Yeah, there's a lot of, it wraps up very easily. There should have been stuff going on at the end here that could have implicated him. It's fine.
Yeah.
I told my sister I was reviewing this movie. She lives in New York City now and works for the same company. The TPS reports and people hitting the printer still happens 20 years later. Some things never change. It's too bad this movie wasn't more popular. I would watch this again. I have a few of the songs from the original soundtrack. Damn, It Feels Good to Be a Gangster, No Tears, and Die Motherfucker Die on my Spotify playlist. Those are the 3 you need.
Yep.
Most punchable face is Brian. Okay, he's going to Brian punchable face. He goes overboard with the flair and like Lauren said, you say a case of the Mondays, you deserve to get punched in the face. All right.
Yeah.
He nailed it. Prop from the movie Red Stapler. We didn't say a prop. My prop is actually the cup holder that's hanging in his car on the passenger side.
Oh my God. I was wondering if anyone else noticed that.
It's hanging from the window on the
amazing.
Side over there.
Lawrence's bottle opener.
Bottle opener.
Oh,
cool.
You bastages. Then I want. No, I want the floppy drive with the virus on.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I love
it. No one did Bud take the stapler?
Bud took the stapler. Okay.
Yeah, Bud took the stapler. Yeah.
Modern day rating for Bud, a 7.9. So that is an 8.2 for us from a modern day ratings. And here's the thing. My internet doesn't work in here, guys. So my modern day ratings probably not going to be able to tell you what it is. Well, hold on. I pulled it up before.
Nice.
Wait. Okay. What did I say? 8.2?
Yes.
That ties in the 28th spot with Blues Brothers.
Okay.
Wow. I feel really good about
8.2 is
okay.
Dead nuts for this
Wedding
movie.
Singer, Jurassic Park, Jaws right above this. Raising Arizona big, The Rock, Ghostbusters just below.
Okay.
This is why I really like being an outlier on a movie like this, giving it a 9
you
like that.
To. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it placed that movie perfectly where it needed
yep.
to be.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks for being here. Tune in next week. We discuss The Replacements, which is going to solidify Keanu Reeves in our top 4 Mount Rushmore, followed by our live show, Air Force One. You can still grab tickets from that at confusedbreakfast.com. If you're new to the podcast, go back this time last year, Coming to America.
All right.
That was a damn good one.
Let's go. Guys, thank you so much for stopping into the office so we could have this fun little episode with you. Really appreciate you listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere where you're consuming that. If you are, make sure you hit a little follow button on there, guys. I'm changing it up on you. There's a lot of people who listen to this show that probably don't actually follow the podcast. All right, so subscribe to the podcast on that platform. Make sure you check us out on social media. And by all means, we've got... I forgot what I was saying. YouTube. YouTube is
AJ's
a thing,
not
too.
Not feeling well. Okay.
Shut
us. Hey, round of applause for AJ making it
he
through
got
this
it,
one.
Man.
No excuses.
YouTube. There'll be no tears in the end.
Check out these classes on YouTube. Thank you.
Sean, go ahead, please.
Yeah, YouTube. Go to our same damn website, confusedbreakfast.com, and see our merch. You got like 10 bucks, get a shirt. I think they're 10. You got like 5, you can get some koozies. You can go to Not Your Father's Beer shirts on Instagram and get some koozies from us. Get some official Steve Koozie koozies. Go to confusedbreakfast.com as well to see the ratings of the movies that we've done. See AJ's ratings, see Mike's ratings, and see my ratings of the movies we've done, as well as the show's ratings overall. Goodbye,
love. Don't forget YouTube as well. And check out our sponsor, Mint Mobile. Today's episode, we are produced by the Upload Media Group in Cedar Rapids. We got Logan on the controls, banging on cameras.
Woo!
Getting all pissed off behind the scenes.
Yes.
UploadMediaGroup.com. Also, we are part of the Cloud 10 iHeart Podcast Network. Learn more at cloud10.fm. That's it for us. Goodbye.
Deuces.
You can cry, but you'll still die. There'll be no tears in the end.
Hey guys, I'm Maggie Lawson.
And I'm her podcast partner in crime, Timothy Albinson.
And we are the hosts of your new favorite show, The Psychologist RN. Each week, we go episode by episode talking about our favorite moments from psych, sharing behind-the-scenes stories, incredible memories, and even have drop-ins from our best friends and fellow cast and crew. If this sounds up your alley, listen to The Psychologist RN on the iHeart app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.